Hello, and welcome to Ace Pod 1.8, brought to you by the law offices of E. Jason Blankenship. It's time for another weekly mailbag with a lot of existential crisis-y questions, because, that's where we're at right now. It has been a week of malaise kind of across the blog. UFR is a day late. I was planning to record this yesterday and did not. The amount of preparation I've been able to do for all these questions, most of them didn't necessarily require prep as much as it's just about Outlook anyway. So we are just going to jump right into it. I'm going to do it like I did last week, split up the email questions and the Twitter questions. Those generally take on different tenors. And we'll start with one from Alex on the email side. A couple of buddies and myself were lucky enough to play at Michigan, different sport, and we have often talked about how there are two unique mental challenges that need to be overcome to win at the university. One, from the moment you walk through the door, you are called, quote, leaders and best. We chose you because you exude excellence, blah, blah, blah. But we often found that this entitlement can be difficult to push aside, thus causing a sort of arrogance when playing, i.e. regardless of the outcome of the game, we are still better because we are Michigan. Two, everyone hates you. I can't phrase this in any other productive way, but Michigan is by far the most hated team in the Big Ten. If you polled every team and asked which team would you want to beat the most, I guarantee that we would be top one or two for every single team, regardless of how good we are at the respective sport. You have to overcome everyone's best punch and deal with the extreme fallout when things go sideways, as you can see with this week where we are the proverbial whipping boy for every single team/media. So my question, do you agree with the two sentiments above? Do you think they have an effect on play? And what would your solution be? We had our own, but I don't want to spoil. I'm intrigued by that. Best, Alex. I certainly agree that Michigan is, first of all, that they absolutely puff people up with the leaders and best stuff and whatnot, and that they generally get a good shot from their opponent because they are generally higher on the list of rivals for opponents than those opponents are on Michigan's list, unless it's Ohio State or Michigan State. But in terms of the effect on play, I'll put it this way. I think if that does have an effect on play, that is an indictment of the coach for that sport. Michigan may have a bigger exceptionalism thing than most schools, and part of that is earned. Part of that is kind of stuff that happened a century ago. When you're playing, and especially when we're talking about the level of football that Michigan's trying to play at, you are getting extremely pumped up from well before you walk through that door. Throughout the recruitment process, at any of these schools that's going to be attempting to compete for Power 5 conference and hopefully national championships. And, there's a common term out there called the de-recruitment process. And that's just kind of the part after recruiting when you get on campus and the coach goes, so this is how it's really like to play, athletics at this level. And usually it involves telling a guy you're really not that much until you actually do something out here. If they're having trouble overcoming that, because I'm sure Jim Harbaugh buys a great deal into the Michigan exceptionalism stuff, but he's also a noted hard ass. Unless he's, and perhaps he has really lost his edge, but it's hard to blame. I mean, there's so many other things that just come down to like, hey, this is some clear strategic stuff that I don't know how much the whole just like this sort of mentality is the problem. I wouldn't be surprised if it plays some factor in there, but it wouldn't make my top three or top five list right now, most likely. That's for sure. All right, the next question. It's feeling unrealistic to have expected them to fully and efficiently implement a new offense in just one offseason. Was that an unrealistic/unfounded expectation? Those questions beg that the implementation is complete. Are we actually seeing an implementation in process? If so, what should our expectations be? How long do these changes really take? Thanks, Amber. I mean, these changes take... it may have been unrealistic to expect that they would fully and effectively change their offense when what we were hoping for was kind of this up-tempo spread. And Michigan had, if not the slowest, then certainly one of the five slowest offenses in the country over the past couple of years, and did not at all play with the kind of spread principles that Josh Gattis was bringing over. That may have been a little bit unrealistic. And we are certainly still seeing things get implemented. Most offenses will be implementing stuff throughout the season, especially when they're relatively new. If anything, I'm worried that Michigan might have tried to implement too much too soon, because it seems like they haven't really been able to drill down the basics. And I'm not sure what our expectations should be at this point, because a lot of it has to do with how skilled Josh Gattis is as a coordinator, and we don't know. This is his first time at this. We also don't know how much Jim Harbaugh may try to pull things back in his direction. So this is something I still have some optimism for the offense in terms of this. This was not necessarily going to be an overnight fix. Obviously, the hope is that they'd be much farther along than they are right now. And that should have been, I don't think that was unrealistic to think that they'd be, it certainly wasn't unrealistic to think that they'd be a lot better than this, especially since they're not doing the most obvious thing, which is just, you know, put it up to your NFL caliber wide receivers. But at the same time, I think the regression of the offensive line probably speaks to a level of being overwhelmed with just the changes in the offense, because there's very little other explanation for this offensive line, which returned everybody except their worst member and had a solid competition at right tackle for that spot. There's not another reasonable explanation for why those guys would take a step back under the same offensive line coach. All right, next question. With these new adjusted expectations, which two games on the schedule do you think we were supposed to win now look like games we should be underdogs in? If there are more than two, what are the biggest swings? Games I immediately see on the schedule that stands out is Iowa. Thankfully, this is not going to be Kinnick, Iowa. But that Iowa game has certainly gone from one that I was very confident in to one where they, even with their struggles up front on defense, I mean, Wisconsin was having struggles up front on defense. So if Michigan can't offset kind of Iowa's biggest weakness by getting some movement up front, then they might be in trouble against, you know, an offense that actually looks functional. At Penn State has just gone to an expected loss, I think, at this point. I don't think anybody would argue with that. Notre Dame at home, same deal. And the game that's probably flipped the most for me in terms of my relative level of optimism is Michigan State, just because I don't see how Michigan scores against that defense with the way the offense is looking. The main reason for optimism is that of the games mentioned, that one is furthest away on the schedule. So Iowa, which comes up in a couple weeks, may actually be the one that scares me a bit, because they have to get their act together in a hurry to kind of turn that one around. And as we know, Michigan tends to get Kirk Ferentz's best shot. And I always, you never know what you're going to get out of them, but that's kind of part of the fear here. The real thing is I've adjusted my expectations for all games, but I think Iowa and Michigan State stand out as ones that I was quite confident in winning before the season, and now I'm much less confident. All right, I piled a few questions in here on my list that were just kind of representative of a general attitude, and I'm just going to pull one of them because there's no need to do all three, and I think this one kind of gets to the heart of it. Can Michigan have it all, e.g. academic excellence, good character players / not paying players, outstanding football performance, especially in a weak recruiting state with another Big Ten school? Should we adjust our expectations, or perhaps should we get real with what's happening in college football in 2019 and be prepared to get our hands dirty to compete? Or should we reasonably expect ebbs and flows since we don't have the roster composition of other top programs like Alabama? It's a lot here. First of all, yeah, I mean, unless you're Clemson and maybe Ohio State and maybe in a year or two Georgia, you don't have the roster composition of Alabama. And if that really is your expectation, then yeah, you should be readjusting those because Michigan is not recruiting quite on that level. You can still get together enough blue chips to compete for a national championship and a Big Ten championship, and Michigan has done that. Should you expect them to regularly compete with the Alabamas and Clemsons and, yes, Ohio States of the world? Not at the rate they're going, obviously. And that's been the case for a while. So, yeah, I think it's time to at least adjust it. But what I want to get to is a couple things. First of all, if you've followed me on Twitter, you've probably seen me express this opinion. The part about Michigan having it all in terms of high academics, not paying players, and being a high-level football program. First of all, if you think there isn't some level of money finding its way to players at Michigan, then I don't know what to tell you. Any college football program that hits like Bud Elliott's blue chip ratio, there's a certain amount of that going on. And if you remained credulous through Daxton Hill deciding to say like go to Alabama and then changing his mind and coming back to Michigan, or just the number of five stars Michigan has pulled in throughout the Jim Harbaugh tenure, everybody does it. And there's a lot of Michigan exceptionalism. This is one that's, I think, more imaginary than real. And if anything, I think I would like to see Michigan get better at it. I think we said that before. On the MGO pod, Brian's probably written about it on the site, and I think I might have too. We should get real with what's happening in football and college football in 2019. And also, this was happening in 1919, and Michigan was doing it. Yeah, and also, I would not ever conflate players accepting money with their character. That I just find gross for the most part, extremely reductive, particularly unfair to guys who come from backgrounds where it's really not where you know, putting your body on the line and you don't have much choice about. I mean, you don't have any choice about the system, and you're deciding to put your body on the line for a chance. Collecting some of that money up front, I don't see a problem with it at all. The problem is with the system. So can Michigan have it all? I mean, I don't think the academic standards are getting that much in the way of pulling in high-level players. It just hasn't been so far. You're going to get a few guys that you're not going to go after, but quite frankly, that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world, since a lot of those guys are at greater risk to wash out. Do I think Michigan is still capable of competing for national championships? Yes, they were like an inch away from being in the Big Ten title game with a chance to play in for one a few years ago. It has not been that long, since 2016. I think they need to obviously figure out what the heck their team identity is, and that's much more pressing than a lot of the recruiting related stuff or a lot of the outside factors that people cite when they try to point to Michigan's exceptionalism, so-called. I think before I get myself in any more trouble, I should move on to the next one. Question is about the offense. We're three games in, and we've seen a game one hodgepodge, game two all run, and game three no run. Do you think Gattis is perhaps overthinking the offense? That is, he's trying to play chess, proactively anticipate and respond to opponent reaction when this is checkers, jump over the person in front of you. Brian's preview outlined that the Michigan rush offense could find some ground versus Wisconsin, but Gattis didn't even try. Could he have thought that's an obvious hole that Wisconsin will overcompensate in their week off, so we'll go elsewhere? Thanks, Nick. I certainly don't think Gattis, like, I don't see the overthinking explanation that, like, nobody goes in and goes, a team has a weakness, they're obviously going to try to cover for that weakness, so we're just not going to go at it. I think Gattis is a young play caller, and when that and an inexperienced play caller. This is his first year. And there's a good chance that when things got off script and things got off script quickly in this game, Wisconsin struck first, Michigan fumbled, and things started getting away, that Gattis probably went away from the run more than was necessary. What was frustrating is he also didn't go to much of an actual downfield passing game either. So I think we're seeing his inexperience right now. And like with anybody who's in their first few games of doing something, there's a chance that that becomes better. There also is a chance that this is who he is. And we just have to kind of hold on to find out. I mean, I'm not on the fire Gattis train yet. It's a bit early for that. But he's certainly got a lot to prove as a play caller and as the guy who's largely responsible for game plans. All right, next question. Does Jim Harbaugh have a problem with not emphasizing his team's strength and de-emphasizing its weaknesses? When I watch other good college football teams, they all have pretty easily identifiable weaknesses, and some of them still achieve great things despite those holes. Specifically in the Big Ten during the Harbaugh era, I'm thinking of the 2015 MSU and 2018 OSU teams that both had major issues with passing defense, or the 2016 Penn State team and their disastrous offensive line. All of those teams won Big Ten championships by papering over those weaknesses and excelling in other areas, and none of them had massive team-wide personnel advantages that Michigan hasn't also had. Meanwhile, Michigan over the years seems to have almost leaned into their weaknesses, deploying strategies like calling slow-developing pass plays with bad offensive tackles or asking their slowest corner to cover man-to-man against super-fast slot receivers. Am I just imagining this because I follow Michigan 10 times more closely than I do these other teams? Am I just sad and seeing everything from B-Pone? Or is this a specific strategic program that a problem that has plagued Michigan for pretty much the entire Harbaugh era? It just seems like every year Michigan lets relatively small personnel deficiencies submarine entire seasons. Let me know your thoughts. Thanks, David. Boy, that was a depressing one because it strikes as true. And while I do think there are fans and analysts and bloggers and people like me, I certainly include myself in this, who will overemphasize the faults of the team that they follow most closely because you're just exposed to them the most often. And when you're checking in on other teams, you're getting highlights or you're not paying as close attention to a lot of the little stuff, and things seem to kind of be easier. And also, we tend to watch good teams. I mean, if you're just flipping around and looking for a decent game to be on, you tend to put on the one with a higher ranked team. That said, I've been in the same spot of just whenever I turn, and I mean, other than maybe, you know, like certain Big Ten West and in-state rivals, other teams do just make it look easier. And I do think there's a problem with Michigan that maybe comes down to a certain arrogance with the recent offensive minds about kind of system over talent, where, you know, things that seem really obvious to do, they're just not doing. And yeah, it does feel like they've like really wasted their talent at receiver the last few years. And it does seem like they could have done a better job of papering over issues with the offensive line over that period of time. There has been no effort to install a quick passing game that it seems like pretty much every other college football team has in place so that other teams don't stack the box, and also so that you can get around offensive line issues. This is perhaps the hallmark of the Jim Harbaugh era so far, has been not quite getting enough out of quite a bit of talent that he has amassed here. And I don't believe he's incapable of doing it. He did the opposite at Stanford. But it's a consistent problem, and it's one that he's going to have to show he can fix. All right, I was gonna answer one kind of just. You know what? I'm gonna do it just because I want to get past this real quick. If given the chance, would you skip to the end of the season? Your life fast forwards too, so you miss Christmas, etc. But just get it over with. No, like I get frustrated because I mean, I guess I'm only part-time right now, so I could technically unplug, but it would be painful to my wallet and my career prospects. But also for someone like Brian, or other people who cover the team, like, I can't unplug from this. This is going to be a part of my life no matter what. And yet, I encounter so much just inability to contextualize this stuff from fans. Like, if you can't find something to enjoy out of a fall, especially in Michigan, outside of, because, you know, something that happens for a few hours on a Saturday gets you that far down, then it might be time to reevaluate how you spend your Saturdays. I know that I probably shouldn't be saying that given what I make my money doing, but like that's the kind of stuff that, especially since I, you know, coming from my perspective of having a chronic illness and all that stuff, like I got to fight pretty hard to get some positive out of a lot of days, but this is never an obstacle. So I don't know, buck up, just spend some time with family or something, pet a dog. I don't know. This is bringing you that far down. I don't know what to tell you, but no, I'm not fast forwarding my life. I've got a life to live. On that note, let's go to a commercial break.
When your plumbing breaks, you hire someone who knows how to fix plumbing. When your power goes out, you hire an electrician. When you are injured in an accident, you should hire someone with experience. Jason Blankenship, a Michigan law graduate, has over 20 years of litigation experience to help you. Jason has handled matters and venues across the state and country, from various circuit courts across the state through the Michigan Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Jason's experience in both federal and state courts makes him able to handle your complicated personal injury case. Before starting his own firm in 2014, Jason worked at a large plaintiff's firm, but he left in order to give his clients the personal attention you and your case deserve. Jason selects each case personally, and you will deal directly with Jason to resolve your case. The insurance companies have teams of lawyers on their side. You should have someone on your side, too. Call 248-533-0516. That's 248-533-0516. Or email jason@blankenshiplawyer.com.
All right, we're back with your Twitter questions, and we'll start off with one on a devastatingly appropriate note from a good friend of the blog, Hoover Street Rag, at Hoover Street. Why does this sadness feel different than the other kinds of sadness we've experienced? I'd say expectations have to do with a lot of that. You know, there was a lot of pushback against Rich Rodriguez, going in, a fair amount of skepticism about him. Obviously, a lot of skepticism about the Brady Hoke hire. But when Harbaugh was hired, we, you know, allowed ourselves a kind of a long moment of unrestrained optimism. And I don't regret that, because that was a really fun period of time compared to what we've had lately. And it wasn't really super irrational, given his track record and where Michigan football had been at. I think a big part of this is just that it's falling so short of expectation in a way that was a little difficult to foresee, whereas the other coaching hires, you could at least kind of see it in the realm of possibility that things could be rough. And just, I don't know, I was on, was a guest on the Seventh Circle podcast, which had a lot of fun doing, and you guys should check that out if you're willing to dip a little bit more into Michigan sports fan misery, since the podcast is all about kind of rough fan, reliving difficult fan experiences from different locales. I was asked whether the Michigan State or Ohio State rivalry kind of in the way those have gone recently has bothered me more. And for me, it was, even though I have more frequent interaction with Michigan State people, and that's the one that you kind of expect less, for me, the answer was unquestionably Ohio State, because it's just been going on for so long. And also, unlike with the Michigan State rivalry, where you can kind of see the cracks in the foundation there, at least so far under Ryan Day, it just, there's not a like light at the end of the tunnel with that, like we were hoping for. I mean, things change very quickly in college football. You have to look no further than this very rivalry with Michigan, Ohio State turning in 2001 or so, when Ohio State hired Jim Tressel after John Cooper. You know, Ohio State fans of a certain age went through what kind of Michigan fans my generation are going through, which is, when is this ever going to change? We at least have precedent of it happening. It just didn't, you know, the easiest comparison to look at is our greatest rival, which might also be contributing to the sadness we're feeling. All right, let's get to the next one. From at Bear Ringer, when can we ask the question we, and by that I mean the more reasonable among us, are all thinking? Obviously, this is referring to what I said in the game recap and talking about what can we start discussing getting rid of Jim Harbaugh. And when it comes down to it, I mean, you can discuss it right now. That's fine. It's just not going to do much. I highly doubt Michigan's athletic department on the inside is as downright trigger happy or anywhere close to it as the Michigan fan base writ large. I think there's good football reasons for that. Just having the patience to let things play out. There are also other things, like if he's fired at the end of the season, he's owed a buyout of $15 million. So I would be floored if he is fired before the end of the 2020 season, when that dips down to $10 million and is still potentially kind of cost prohibitive, especially considering you'd like to think that the level of candidate that Michigan would be going after to replace Jim Harbaugh would be a level of can't miss but guy that probably requires a buyout of his own, unless your timing is very fortuitous on when this coach becomes available. But if you're looking to poach a high-level coach, that tends to be expensive. I mean, in terms of when do we think it's reasonable to start firing this guy, to start thinking about firing this guy? I mean, if the rest of this year continues to play out with the team looking abject, then yeah, it's time to bring up the discussion, but it's also time to bring up the discussion in the context of, we're going to have to hang on, so I don't know how productive this is going to be. Until then, might as well just hold on and see what's going to happen for the rest of the year, because, you know, seen some wild turnarounds in college football that have taken place well after the first three games of the season. From at A Bean Tweeting, how little faith should I have in this game being akin to Arham blasting of PSU in 2016? You forget that year Michigan beat the crap out of Penn State. And then Penn State, a bit by fluke, but also by very much turning things around on offense, ended up winning the Big Ten title. I think there's some reason to hold on to, which is simply the level of talent that still is on this roster. There are a lot of really, really good football players on this team. The level of talent is... you know, with the exception of maybe a couple of positions that have thinned out, playoff level. The problem is that the coaching has not been there so far this year, and there are sore spots. Defensive tackle really stands out as one right now, and we might have to put the whole offensive line on the list if the Wisconsin game is any sort of bellwether. But again, I mean, Michigan made Penn State look awful in that game in 2016, and Penn State managed to put together a strong season from that point forward. So, I mean, I don't have a ton of faith at the moment in Michigan pulling that level of turnaround, but I also think it might be premature for the people who are saying this could be like a 5 or 5 loss team or something like that. I'm not quite ready to go that far. We'll see. But, I mean, their goals are still ahead of them. They do get to say that right now. Let's see. Now that it's basketball season, what are reasonable expectations in Juwan Howard's first year? Thank you, SportsGeek4022, for a hoops question. I would say reasonable expectations for the season are to make the tournament. I think it's pretty simple. This is probably going to be a relatively volatile team in terms of you're going to have what I would guess is going to be a relatively dramatic schematic change. You're going to have to find a new leading scorer. And while the defense is going to keep things at a certain level, I suspect the offense is going to have kind of some up and down moments throughout the season, especially if they don't dig up a reliable shooter. Both at the two and off the bench. But especially in kind of a down year in the Big Ten beyond Michigan State and maybe Maryland, I think competing for like a double bye of the Big Ten Conference tournament and making the NCAA tournament are quite reasonable expectations given the talent and experience on board, because that defense should largely carry over from last year. So you've got that senior point guard center combination that should keep things rolling along at a certain level. All right, from our friend Gordon at Gordon93, there are a lot of videos of people domesticating a pet bear, and there is even a bear ranch in the UP where you can hold and pet baby bears. If you can teach a bear to be friendly, it shows that bears can learn on an advanced level. How can Michigan create a college for bear education, enroll the bears as students, and get some bears at DT before the Notre Dame team? Is that too soon? Gordon, I'm not sure if that's soon enough. They should get this rolling tomorrow. You've got to figure out, I think your main issue here is going to be encroachment penalties. I assume you're mostly unleashing them on defense because of, you know, paws and catching, not ideal. But if you're looking for, hey, you just might have to use like a couple of your burlier DTs as bear wranglers until they actually snap the ball and then just let go and see what happens. I'm very open to this idea. I'm open to also seeing how it works on non-center positions on the offensive line. And yeah, let's give it a shot. Couldn't hurt. All right, from Mark Woodan. In as sincere and non-sassy way as possible, if I were to repeat my question from last week that you correctly called out as being too pessimistic, would you change your answer? The question was, any plausible way to see the offense being strong this year? Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I've obviously dialed down my expectations because we have another data point, and it was a very bad data point. But we also saw the path at the end of the game, which is just throw it to your NFL-level wideouts, especially Nico Collins, because that dude seems to catch the ball or get interfered with no matter the quality of the throw. Just play to the strengths of your team. And yeah, it was discussed earlier that Jim Harbaugh has not been great at that at Michigan, but that is the path forward. Also tightening things up on the offensive line, hopefully getting a much better performance than what they did on Saturday, and having a hopefully healthy Zach Charbonnet running behind it, just working out some of the play calling stuff. There's a lot that they can do to improve. It's a big reason why there's so much complaining right now, and justified complaining, is that the problems are in large part obvious. And while the specifics of fixing it, you know, obviously have to come down to a professional, it does not take a professional to see a lot of the issues with the way Michigan has gone about trying to score this year. So, you know, change your focus towards the wideouts. Hopefully get some improvement from Shea Patterson. If he's not improving, maybe take a look at Dylan McCaffrey. And hope for better play calling and better health. And more shots to the receivers. Have we said that enough? More shots to the receivers. From Tim Tolley. Would you fire Jim Harbaugh and hire an Urban Meyer tomorrow if the opportunity presented itself? No. From at Haberman Rand. Has the culture around Michigan created by alumni, boosters, and the former players become so toxic that it is impossible for a head coach to succeed at Michigan? I don't think so. Winning cures a lot. The culture was toxic when things were getting very bad. And culture was just fine in 2016. You know, it really was. You know, coach was succeeding. I think it really just takes winning. And that culture will change on a dime. If you think Michigan is harsh, you should go down and hear what they say in Alabama, even about Nick Saban at times. And they spent a lot of time in the wilderness, and they were still that fan base. But you go back and look in like the 90s, and that wasn't the Alabama that you know right now. You know, I'm not saying Michigan's going to necessarily turn around like that, in part because Alabama's really perfected how to do things in 2019, but I can see culture being a part of the issue. It is not the issue. I'm on to my last question, which is, I save these for last, not sports related, so if you just wanted sports, thanks for listening. From Jeep and Ben, for the next day's pod, how's your mobility? You were getting a cane at one point. What's something that surprised you about using it, positive and negative? I'm still mostly housebound at this point. Some of that is just being scared to test my limits since I've had a relatively thin floor to work with in terms of if I kind of push it energy wise, I can crash out pretty easily. Including I've had some issues when I've been after like looking after my brother's dog and, you know, you don't have a choice in terms of putting out a certain level of physical activity when you're doing that. And, I pushed a little bit on that front, especially, when I don't, I mean, to bring it back to the cane, I have been using it. I'm not always great about using it. I should use it more. What surprised me is how much it's helped. It really does make a difference to just have something, there both for, kind of taking a little bit of the pressure, the wear and tear off of walking. And also, people with, ME often have, balance issues. I get those every once in a while. So, especially if I'm standing for a long time or something like that, you know, just kind of being able to lean on something and post up, can be pretty nice. Negative surprise, I haven't run into it much, but I have gotten some kind of long looks from people, and I know I haven't had to deal with a confrontation yet, I know it is a big problem within the chronic illness and disability community that people who use mobility aids, whether it be a cane or a wheelchair, people can see it as a not legitimate use of, say, like if you're skipping the line to skipping to the front of the line at the airport to board a plane or something like that, and you're in a wheelchair and someone sees you get up out of that wheelchair, you don't have to be bound to these things to have them be a massive help and something that is needed for a certain level of freedom, mobility, and freedom from being exhausted all the freaking time. I've been surprised at how much freedom a cane can open up. I'm hoping it can kind of kickstart me getting out and walking again before the weather really turns in the winter. I'm embracing it. I mean, it's something where it's a fine line between sort of leaning into being sick. And I mean, you know, people get charged with this so much more than it actually happens, but you know, you can to a certain extent kind of like embrace the being sick aspect of being sick, and have that be a problem. But on the other side of things is either trying to avoid embarrassment, avoid discussing certain topics. So honestly, the other surprise for me has been that when I've been out with it, it has really not come up. And that that's nice to just have it, you know, because I think, you know, the big thing for me was I don't like drawing attention to myself when I'm just out and about or working or whatever. This isn't something I want to draw attention to 24/7. And so to have that not be the first thing that people discuss is nice. All right. Thanks, everybody, for your questions this week. Got a lot. Didn't have to ask twice this week, but I do appreciate everybody writing in. Yeah, plan to be back next week with another episode, and expect the hoops coverage side of things to start ramping up as Michigan just wrapped up their first practice under Juwan Howard, and we're edging closer to the season, and you'll also start seeing some season preview content written on the site, as long as things keep going well. So thanks again for listening. Thank you to our sponsor, the Law Office of E. Jason Blankenship, and have a good one.